Moncrief on News Talk.
Now, in his book, Cyber Republic, Reinventing Democracy in the Age of Intelligent Machines, George Sarkadakis provides a guide for the forthcoming Fourth Industrial Revolution and how democracies can benefit from the digital economy. I'm delighted to say George joins us now on News Talk. George, how are you today?
I'm very well, and thank you very much for inviting me.
I'm slightly nervous about the fact that the Fourth Industrial Revolution is coming. What should I expect?
It's a mixed bag. Obviously, there is a huge opportunity for the economy and for society. All those technologies are coming online. They're promising to act as a cognitive multiplier, if you like, of the whole civilization. So a huge opportunity. But it also comes with a number of risks. We see some of those risks already in front of us. The way, for example, AI algorithms create echo chambers on social media and creating more polarization in our society. And of course, you know, the specter of unemployment, where automation from AI and robots will start biting into, you know, more and more jobs. So it's a mixed bag.
Right, because I know the first industrial revolution, it was automating manual work, but this one will be automating intellectual work. So will nobody be safe?
So I think that is why it's important to have this conversation now, because just like in the past industrial revolutions, what we learned from history is that things need to change. Societies need to adapt to a new reality. And in this particular revolution, this reality will come much faster. So we're right. Not going to have much time to, you know, debate at length and adapt. We need to adapt very quickly, and that means we need to discuss this at length now.
Okay, time is of the essence.
I think so.
To look at the age we live in, how would you characterize it? I think people are used to names like the Cold War era or the post-Cold War era. What era are we in exactly at the moment, would you say?
I think we're in an era of rage and unhappiness, despite, you know, the relative material abundance that is around us. I think these are the key, I would say, emotions that I at least detect around the world. There is so much anger, especially in the West, against the political system, against each other, so huge polarization. And there's a deep unhappiness as well, which I don't think can be explained, in a very simple terms. But something needs to change. Something needs to change to revitalize, you know, our societies, revitalize our minds, and create perhaps a new consensus, a new purpose, and new goals for our societies.
A lot of people would probably point the finger of blame in their rage and unhappiness and fear as well, I think would be another emotion, at the whole digital revolution. They would look at, you know, how it's kind of changed the world out of recognition. If you look at the newspaper industry, music to an extent, also how it's interfering with elections and democracy. You would have a fear that this is just the beginning of it and that we have no control over it.
So I think that's, well, if we just focus for a moment on the impact on politics, right? And this is where social media play a very important role. What we see there, we see a misalignment between the goals that social media platforms have, which are commercial enterprises. They have an advertising business model, which is based on you getting excited about social media. That's their model. That's how they make money. This is completely misaligned with the goals of a democratic society, where we need to have a debate. We need to, come together with people we have different opinions with and sit down and discuss, which is hard, but it's absolutely necessary. So there is a clear misalignment, and I think that is where the problem is. And that's what the problem we need to fix as well.
Right. So how do we get some degree of control back?
Well, in my book, I'm sort of looking into alternative ways of designing AI systems so they are aligned with political and societal goals. Let's say, for example, that we agree that we need to participate more actively in politics. Okay, let's say through citizen assemblies, like the one you had in Ireland a few years ago.
Yes,
right? very successfully.
Exactly.
So what if we imagine, let's say, for example, that we are able to have more of that, perhaps at scale, at every level, where citizens are actively engaged into, you know, influencing policy. If you want to do that, then what you need to do, you need to find a way that technology can help citizens very quickly learn what are the issues, what are the different opinions on the issue, get informed, so they can participate in those deliberations. That is absolutely necessary. That will transform what happens now, where everybody, you know, enjoys listening and confirming their own ideas in echo chambers.
Yes.
We can build algorithms that can do that. We can you know, build AI that can have same goals as citizens, same goals as humans. It's just that we haven't done it yet.
Okay. Is trust a big issue there? Because it seems to me a lot of people feel that if they put details or feelings or thoughts into the digital world, they don't know what's going to happen with it, how it's going to be used, and they're slightly fearful of that.
Absolutely, and I think this is right. We should be fearful of that, because what happens now is that our data, which is in fact a very valuable asset, extremely valuable in fact, where our data, our personal data, is combined and aggregated with other people's data, that data is collected now by private enterprises mostly, well, governments as well, but let's focus for a moment with, you know, the Facebooks and Googles and whatnot of this world. And what those corporations do is that they use the data in order to create business value. Now, the problem there is that, number one, the existing regulation, which is very much focused on privacy, is inefficient and insufficient in order to protect the citizens, simply because there's a power asymmetry. If I want to, you know, file a complaint against Google, oh, good luck to me, right? You know, I don't have the money to pursue that. So that's number one. Number two, which is also very important, I think we should start discussing it, is property rights around those data. Like right now, you know, if Google or Apple or whoever, or Uber, make billions of dollars using our data, we're not really gaining anything out of that, you know, apart from, I don't know, free email. So maybe we should rethink that equation and level the playing field, if you like, of the AI economy by rethinking data as a public asset where we citizens have a stake.
Right. Would that mean money coming from the big corporations like Apple and Google into the state?
So that could, yes, indeed, absolutely. There is a concept called data trust, and essentially what the data trust does is it creates a governance structure around data, whereby the data trust represents the data providers to whomever wants to use the data. Like, for example, think of a city, okay? The citizens living in a city, their data, okay? So you can build a data trust that is governed democratically. Perhaps they have, you know, citizen representatives, the city council, whatever. Those administrators have fiduciary responsibility to the data providers. This is very important. And what the data trust does, it collects and aggregates, anonymizes, de-identifies this data, and makes it available to whoever wants to use it. Now, what you get with that is multiple benefits. First of all, you level the field. For example, you know, with startups, okay, that need data in order to develop new innovative ideas, they find it very hard today to get their hands around data because the data belongs to the big corporations.
Right.
So those startups can have access to that data, right? So you get more innovation. At the same time, the data trust charges for the use of that data. And that money that's collected, and can be very considerable, by the way, can go back into the citizens or back into the city or back into, you know, financing perhaps the UBI of the future.
You seem optimistic about this. You seem to think that if we take control of this at this point, we would be moving towards a much more enlightened age for democracy and for how we work and how we live our lives, basically.
So it helps that I'm an engineer. If you compare engineers with economists, engineers are the optimists and economists are the pessimists. I'm just generalizing here. So I'm definitely an optimist, but you know, nothing's going to happen by itself.
Right.
We need leaders, you know, in professional associations, in trade unions, in city councils, in patient groups, you know, who will understand what's at stake, will also understand the possibilities of this technology in order to really change everything for the better, in my opinion,
right,
and take charge, stay in control, and start piloting all those different schemes, like the data trust that I mentioned, like AI for good, reinventing new business models, you know, digital cooperatives. There's a bunch of stuff we can do to not only build a better future for ourselves, but very much preserve what we got. You know, we got a democratic system of government that is under threat, in my opinion. So, you know, we need to preserve that. as well.
Right. So educate yourself, I think, is one of the things. And don't be afraid to drive it forward. George, thank you very much for joining us today. I also am an optimist, so I think this will hopefully all go in the right direction. And the book is called Cyber Republic: Reinventing Democracy in the Age of Intelligent Machines. George, thank you very much indeed.
Moncrief on News Talk.